Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in everybody. It is a Thursday here at Jaguars Today. Week 14 of the NFL season kicking off tonight in Chicago with the Dallas Cowboys taking on the Bears. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony, and Lauren Brooks here with you on Jaguars Today. This morning, taking a look at Jags-Texans and also the three-quarter poll of the Jaguars season. What's up, Rhino? Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it was fine. I was here until 3 o'clock on Thursday.
Were you really?
But that's fine. But it, you play the Bortles reel at the start of the show.
Yeah.
I think that's, you talk about the defensive touchdowns. I think that's the biggest takeaway from Sunday is they needed points at the end. He made some plays.
I agree. I mean, because defense clearly was more important throughout the course of that football game with the two touchdowns and the turnovers and the havoc that they caused in the backfield. And I've been stressing that all week. It was needed that it wasn't all on the defense, that he came through in the second half, got the touchdown drive with Mercedes, but then in a situation where you got to put points on the board. And some people said, oh, I would have liked to have seen him put a touchdown up.
So what?
Small steps, right? Small steps. They got the job done, as Tony's been pointing out, you know, converting a couple of second and 15s on the drive, picking those up right away, not putting yourself in third and long situations, big runs. Yeah, so I think you're right. It was important. It was much needed. I would think, I mean, this is a guy who, we talk about his makeup, seems to have the right demeanor for the job, but it's got to mess with your psyche when your team, I know it's not all you, but your team's 1-10. You haven't been playing sharp football. You've thrown an interception at least one in every single game. To have a clean game from that standpoint and come through in the end.
I mean, if you are it's one thing to be a competitor and strong mentally and blah, blah, blah. But from a human being aspect, that has to help your confidence for the very reasons. There's no interceptions. You know, in the Cleveland game, they won. He threw a touchdown and three picks. He even said after the game, it wasn't me.
Right.
You know, this one, he played a role. And granted, the offense has one touchdown last two games. You know, work on that. But I thought you saw Jed Fish look at the Indy game and say, okay, they have to create some different things to get the ball moving. They did that with the Wildcat. They took advantage of some Pierre-Paul just crashing down on every read option. And Blake ran for, you know, 68 yards. So I think some positive things come out of that game, of this game, and, you know, and obviously good for them as a win. It should get them to the finish line.
It's when they first got the offense moving a little bit towards the end of the first half is when I thought they really got Blake moving, right? I mean, they started rolling him out more. He even started moving more. We had talked about this. He had kind of gotten away from that helter-skelter when the play breaks down, extending the plays and looking downfield. But here I felt like he was avoiding pressure a little bit better, getting outside the pocket, and certainly with some of the designed rollouts, they got him on the move. He looked a little bit more comfortable.
That's something, I mean, something that Pete Prisco's talked about a couple times, and I was agreeing with him that maybe they needed to simplify things a little bit more by keeping him in the pocket. And I think that was the plan early on, because you saw a lot of like shotgun, pistol snap, one step throw. Well, then the pass protection was starting to break down. I think you had to get him on the move a little bit. But you talk about that drive to make it 21-3. You know, 12-yard pass, 14-yard pass, 17-yard pass, 5-yard pass, and then they stall big time in the red zone and decide.
Which has been a pattern.
Yeah, and they decided to go for it on fourth down, got it, but then a jokal penalty. But it's what they needed to do at that point was A, get something, and B, show a pulse, and then both happened.
Yeah, they both got them going, and then really – though you come out in the second half, and I think they had 9 plays, Tony, at the start of the second half before they had to punt. But regardless, you know, you come out at the start of the second half, it's 21-3. Offense gives the ball back to New York Giants. When that punt is caught, you're thinking there's a what percent chance that the Jaguars can win that football game on Sunday? 1%?
Well, I tweeted it early. Some odds maker sent me. They were like at 8.2%.
8.2% to win the football game. Which I can understand from typical NFL standards. Maybe you'd be at 8.2% down 21-3.
One.
But, right, with the way the offense had been going. And what did you think of at the time Gus Bradley's decision to go for two with 2 minutes left in the third?
When you're 1-10, I have no problems doing anything like that. even if they would have lost the game because of that, I would have said, hey, you know, maybe next time you do it. But, you know, it's time to make decisions when you're 1-10 because you have the luxury to do it. So that was my deal. And my thing is when this team scores a touchdown, I think they have to operate under the premise of may not get back down here again.
Right, and that's clearly what he was operating under, which is, you know, with 17 minutes left in the football game, typically you don't operate that way in the National mm-hmm. Football League, right? I mean, you...
Yeah, I mean, if it's, let's say a year from now, they're 5-3, and chances are he kicks the extra point.
Right. Well, if you're 5-3, it means your offense is probably, you probably feel like you're going to get a couple more opportunities to go down the field and all that, because at the time, you kick the extra point, and if you give up a field goal, all right, you're down 7. That's why you kick the extra point, to keep it on the 7 number, because you figure with 17 minutes left, the odds of shutting out the other team are probably not that high either. They did give up the 1 field goal, but in the end, it all worked out for them.
Well, one quick thing on that start of the second half, it just this they ran 9 plays and they punted from their own 35.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then also later...
That's how the Giants put together a 19-play drive. You can't go far on those plays if you're going to have a 19-play drive.
And then there was this doozy here in the third quarter where they go sack, 7-yard pass, sack, loss on the screen, sack. And they still win the game.
Well,
but, hey...
You win the game, you can overlook a lot of those...
The 7 sacks are a concern.
Definitely.
At 50. I think this week is... I think this is a... big, big week for Luke Jokel. I think he needs, and he sort of said it yesterday when I asked him, this is why they drafted you, to take on this guy.
Right.
And he said, exactly.
Right.
So see how he bounces back.
Yeah, and how do you think the offensive line, clearly when an offense gives up 7 sacks and the running game really didn't get going with the exception of those read plays by the quarterback, you can't say the offensive line had a great day. But, you know, everybody I talked to who's watched the breakdown spreads the blame. Said a couple of those on the running back, maybe one or two of those might be on the quarterback. And certainly the line had issues between Jokel and Beatles in particular.
It was more spread out than the 10 sack debacle, where you could probably pin 7 or 8 of them on the line. I mean, Denard had 2. He blocked the right guy. He just got beat.
Right.
Gus pointed out 2 when I asked him about guys getting unblocked sacks. He said quarterback needs to throw it away. Okay, that's 2. Jokel had 2, and I had Bowenko with 1. So, is it comforting that it just wasn't 2 guys accounting for 7 sacks? You know, maybe so, but it just shows you that there just needs to be system wide improvement.
Yeah, no question. You can't be giving up 7. Yeah, and your quarterback gets hit more than that. On top of that, Houston Texans coming in this week. Are they as good as they appear to be? Clearly, their offense is not as good as Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing 6 touchdowns, but that's as good as they can possibly look, I think, against the Tennessee Titans. J.J. Watt playing like an MVP this season. How good is this Texans team that's coming into Jacksonville?
If you look at their personnel, you know, Foster's near 1,000. Hopkins is over 1,000. Andre Johnson's at 65 catches. J.J. Watt, maybe NFL MVP, and they're 6-6. They lose it, you know. So they haven't won 2 in a row since the first 2 weeks of the season. So they're looking at this game as a way to get back in that, you know, they're 2 games behind the South with Indy. But, I mean, I think this is a winnable game for the Jaguars because look at all the things Texans are doing well. They're still 6-6, so there's obviously some openings there. I think if Bortles has some time to throw some quick passes, I think they'll be able to take advantage of the secondary, which may or may not have Kareem Jackson back. You know, their safeties aren't anything to write home about. So, you know, one thing Tennessee tried to do last week to sort of negate Watt was they wouldn't double team him. They just throw quick. So, okay, does that mean some tight end screens to get Mercedes more involved? Is that Marquise a little bit on some bubbles? So I think the Jaguars feel they have some openings to move down the field.
Yeah, do some different things to not let Watt just be able to pin his ears back mm-hmm. and come after you. And he obviously the difficulty is, I think, when you're going up to the line of scrimmage, you got to have some options, because if you're going to run one to the left side because he's lined up on the offense's right side a couple of times, well, he's just as likely to be on the other side the next time. He's going to move all over the place.
You know, I was talking to Chad Henne about this since he's faced them the last 3 times.
Yeah.
I said, every time the quarterback goes 52 is the mic, I said, do you do 99? He goes, absolutely. because he moves around. He goes, you identify the mic and then you identify where Watt is for that very reason.
99's right there. Right. Please there. Block that guy.
Sam Young, have fun.
Would it be Sam Young? Or
I think so. I mean,
makes sense, right? To keep Josh Wells kind of like the swing guy.
Yeah, and Gus pointed out Monday and a little bit yesterday that they feel that Wells' better spot is the left side. Sam's better spot is the right side. Just by reading between those thin lines there, you think you'd start with Young. Both will be active. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, you know, why not just go with Wells? He's a rookie. See what he can do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they've seen Sam Young play. He's done okay this year.
He didn't embarrass himself.
No, he's been forced. So if they feel – and Sam Young, to me, from what it's been described anyway, is pure right tackle, right? And so when you've got that situation, let's say you're in the game and Jokel were to get hurt in the game – rather than have a guy who's playing on the right side, took practice reps on the right side that week, then have to move the left, and you're inserting another guy in. I guess it's just easier that way to have the one
guy.
That's
a good point. I mean, that would be the reason to go with Young on the right side. And, you know, you think that with Sam's a little bit more, obviously more of a veteran, a little more cagey, we'd be able to, A, get away with some stuff. And also, B, let's say Watt does beat him on the second snap of the game, he'd be more likely to be able to bounce back and forget about it.
All right. I don't know if I tweeted out the question of the day today. I posted on Facebook.
Half of this question is a stumper.
Well, and that's why we made it a two-part question today. We were going to ask you three quarters of the way through the season who the Jaguars' MVP is in your eyes, but I felt that that would be too obvious for a lot of people anyway. So we asked you two-thirds of the way through the season, who are the Jaguars' offensive and defensive MVPs to this point? So I need two names to nominate there, and we'll take a look at some of your responses later on and give away some T-shirts, some Jaguars Today gear coming up in the show today. We'll hear from Blake Bortles coming up. We'll also hear from Jed Fish. Take your calls as well if you'd like to participate at 641-1010. We'll look at the last month of the season. What does Ryan O'Halloran think the Jags need to show? Which veterans have the most to win or lose, to gain or lose, I should say, in terms of their roster security heading into the offseason, and a lot more to come. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union. Fat Tony here with you. You can tweet the show today at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren as well, and participate in the fan feedback spotlight two-thirds of the way through the season. Who are the Jaguars' offensive and defensive MVPs? You can also post your response at facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Just getting rolling live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars Today on a Thursday morning here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Green Day, Nice Guys Finish Last. Doing a little permutation in my head. I don't know yet.
That wouldn't make any sense. The good guys won on something.
I know. Last four games of the season, I don't have anything for you today so far. What?
Well, I never have a clue. So.
Yesterday I got it because it was about Scobie winning Special Teams Player of the Week, and we had 38 special deleted off. So, Lauren, you know, she needs to basically hand-deliver the answer to me, and then...
You're close.
Am I close?
I was going to say, I know Green Day's from California, so that's not it.
No, I wouldn't do that to y'all.
So we're down to the last quarter of the season is close?
Mm-hmm, that's close.
Okay.
You can stew on that.
I'll stew on that. I got this email on Monday. I didn't read it until yesterday because I don't always read my email in a timely fashion. Twitter's done that to me, man. People can get a hold of me instantaneously, and my phone vibrates. Oh, someone tweeted you. Someone tweeted you, and it's constantly going off. But Mike Borquin, who's at Kayakfish on Twitter, who tweets us, but I guess had more than 140 characters to share with us.
Right.
Said he had the good fortune of scoring a couple of club seats to the game this past weekend. He said that's certainly the way to go. But holy crap, were there a lot of Giant fans in the East Club. However, after the game on the bus ride down to Mandarin, the Giant fans, he said, were gripping hard. Some of their quotes, how in the hell do we lose to the Jags? That is completely on Coughlin. He's never done anything. How about that? We have the most talent in the NFC.
What?
We should be 9-3, and my favorite, we're better than Dallas. He said the last one actually made him snort in laughter and finally say something to the effect of, keep them coming, this is hilarious, which was greeted quite warmly by the Jaguar fans riding the bus.
We got the most talent in the NFC.
We got the most talent in the NFC, and Coughlin has never done anything. That's rough crowd, man. I mean, look, I get it. You come in and you're facing a team that's got one win. Even if you only have three, you think you're going to beat it. And then when you're up 21-0, and you let that one get away.
That's a pathetic loss for the Giants.
Oh, it's awful. We'd be saying the same thing if it were the Jags on the other end of it, right? It's not that. I mean, the Jags made plays to take that away from them. They created their own success. But still, when you're up 21-0 against a team that has struggled as the Jaguars have offensively, can't lose that football game.
Well, yeah, Coughlin had the great quote after the game. They've been better off kneeling on the ball.
He was right in this case. I mean, they probably would have if they had just run the ball, eaten 30 seconds of clock on every play, and punted it away and forced the Jags to drive the length of the field. At that point in time, without the spark that JT Thomas touchdown gave them, I don't think they get it done.
Yeah, and they might have done it once. Yeah,
right.
So that's 21-10. But I think one of the main things out of that game is next year at Jaguars training camp, when you guys are outside, Tom Coughlin may be a guest.
Ah, there you go. Visiting. Yeah. Visiting guest. Visiting
dignitary. Well, it's great to have Coach Coughlin here.
Coach Coughlin's visiting. Coach, how are you? Do you think he gets the axe?
I think this would, if you go 4-12, third time in a row missing the playoffs, I think maybe they need a boost there, because Eli's getting up there, and obviously he's not the golden boy anymore, but I think I'd make a change.
They won 2007 and 2010? Was that the second one that he won?
7-11.
7-11.
So they'll miss it 12, 13, 14.
Yeah, they haven't made the playoffs since they won the Super Bowl. And
what do you think should be the grace period for a coach who wins a Super Bowl? I'm not saying you can go 0-16 every year, but I mean,
3 years is legitimate.
Is that enough, you think?
Yeah, I think so. Because
what if you've won two?
Yeah, well, then it's 6 years. But you look at the way the Giants—they lost their first six last year. They've lost seven in a row this year. That shortens your grace period when you're having dumpster fires like that.
Yeah, you think he's back?
I think if he wants to be back,
well, then he'll
he's
be back.
Right. I don't know if Coughlin wants to go through it again. And they're already making the changes with the offensive staff this past offseason, with McAdoo coming in as the offensive coordinator from Green Bay. So if you're going to make the transition, it seems like a logical time to do it, even at the head coach spot, if you find somebody else that is committed to that kind of plan on that side of the ball. But look, he won two Super Bowls in New York. If he wants another year, you give Coughlin another year up there, and really it's on him whether or not he wants to come back and do this dance again. I don't get the sense that he doesn't.
I don't either. I mean, he just strikes me as the kind of guy that wants to finish the job, and what else is he going to do? I mean, he's going to do the J-Fund stuff, but he does that now.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to coach. That's who he is. It's in his blood. I think he would do it. I don't think Tom Coughlin would stop anytime soon. I mean, I don't even think it's just a couple more years. I think Tom will go as long as his health permits. I think he would go another 6-7 years if the opportunity is there.
I think he would too.
He can change locker room, stay in the same building. I told you that.
Right.
He's welcome to Rex's
old
office.
He's not going to the Jets.
He can have Rex's office right now.
He's not going to the Jets. Look, this is a guy who grew up in the Giants organization.
I like that.
Right.
You like that move, right?
He wouldn't have to move.
He wouldn't have to move. Stay right there.
He's a guy who grew up in the Giants organization, went and made his bones in college, and then got the opportunity coming to the NFL with Jacksonville, which is why he was here. It was an opportunity to get back into the NFL. He goes back to New York because that's his roots when it comes to football, is up there in New York and the Giants specifically. I think that when he's done with the Giants, he's done. I don't think he's going anywhere else.
We got two items of breaking news here, Kevin.
Breaking news, please break.
Do it.
Haladi Nata suspended 4 games. Ravens for Adderall, so he'll miss the Jaguars game.
Okay, that's pretty big.
Then,
that's one of their better players.
And then, Lawrence, do you have anything in the music for Battle Hymn of the Republic? Jim McElwain and the Gators got a deal.
They got a deal done. There you go.
Jeremy Foley is a genius.
What do you think he paid to get him?
I bet they cut it in half. And I bet Fleur goes up there and plays a game in Denver against Colorado State.
That'd be the first time they went out of conference west of the Mississippi since...
Ever?
You tell me, buddy.
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell
you. Warren, you're the resident Gator. When's the last time y'all went west of the Mississippi for a game outside of a bowl?
And that concludes the Gator portion.
Yeah.
Crickets from the producer.
All right, let's go to the phone, 641-1010. Jimmy on the line wants to weigh in on the MVP discussion, three-quarter poll for the Jaguars season. What's up, Jimmy? How are you?
What's going on?
How are you?
Lauren. I'm doing awesome, guys. Without a doubt, hands down, no question that Derek Warren should be he's the MVP of the entire team. He has elevated the defensive line. He's taken on double teams. He got sacked. Gets in the backfield, he penetrates, he just changes the entire dynamic of our defensive line. And that guy, for me, I think is the centerpiece. And on the offense, I mean, you know, you have to go Linder, because Linder not only is a rookie, he's played against some pretty good talent this year. He's held his ground. He's been by far our best offensive lineman. I mean, if Robinson stays healthy and produces more, I mean, probably goes to him. But Linder has just been a solid centerpiece of our offensive line with Jokum up the par and the waste of money and Dane Beatles. I mean, we need so much help in our offensive line. But he's been that guy. Polanco, too, for that matter. He's just, they've been the guy. So that centerpiece right there for the both sides, I'd have to give it to Derek Marks and Leonard.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy. What do you think? Derek Marks is going to be a very heavily voted for player. And that's kind of why I wanted to do offense defense, because to me, he's the first guy I think of when I think of overall team MVP as well. Would you agree with that?
Yes. If it was just team MVP, it'd be a short discussion.
Right.
So I agree with Marks. Linder, I cannot vote an offensive lineman MVP on a group that's responsible for 50 sacks.
Okay, I can understand that rationale too, but I also understand Jimmy's that he's been the one constant that most people who've been breaking down the film say that he has been, you know, the least cause of those sacks and has done the best job overall on a consistent basis. So I think there's an argument to be had on both sides.
I mean, I acknowledge his point. He's had some rookie games too. Plus he missed the game with injury. I'm trying to think of who I go with offensive MVP. I would probably just go Allen Robinson. I mean, he didn't make a play in a game to help them win a game, but he was at least the one guy who was interesting to watch. So.
Okay.
That's right. My criteria.
If that is your criteria, Marquise Lee's maybe becoming interesting to watch, right, over the last couple games?
Yeah, I mean, the lights appeared to come on, and talk to some of the organizations that you look at Allen Robinson, he missed basically all of camp, but he came in, you know, hit the ground running. It just shows you how every player is different. Allen was mature enough and had a knowledge enough of the offense that he could just get going right away. Marquise had to be a doer. He needed to be out there practicing these routes. He needed to be involved in the game plan. He wasn't when he was hurt. Then he didn't play a little bit. So now that he's gotten both practice time and game time, you maybe see him. You definitely have seen him make some plays the last couple weeks.
Let's go back to the line. Brian, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. He stole my answer with the Derek Marks. So I'm going to go JT Thomas on defensive MVP. The reason why, because consistency and just the way he moved around the ball. Him and Cyprian is on every tackle. Offense MVP, I'm just going to give it to the whole front seven of the defense because they put the offense in place to score a lot of the time.
Okay,
and
so the defensive front seven is the offensive MVP for the Jacksonville
Jaguars.
Yes, outside the box.
That is outside the box thinking, and they've scored a couple of touchdowns this past week as well.
And I was just going to say that reference to the comments made by, I believe, Roy Miller or Sendarek came on and said right before the game that if that's what the offense needed for them to win was score points or do more, and they did more. So I give that to the front seven of the
Brian. I think he is referring to, I think it was Sendarek. We played that in the pregame show with J.P. Shadrick the other day, basically saying we're playing great. Doesn't matter. It's not good enough because we're not winning. Great, you can only say you're playing great if it was a performance that resulted in the victory. You can argue that, but I understand his point.
Well, it's like he was saying after the Colts game, I said, you know, three turnovers, and he looked at me and says, gotta score a touchdown.
Right. Matter. Three. If, yeah. You know, maybe you need four, maybe you need five.
Yeah, and a caller made a good point on JT Thomas, very unsung player this year, who pretty much has bailed this team out by being able to play a couple different spots.
And playing pretty well.
Yeah, he's around the football. he hasn't missed a ton of tackles. So I think he's been and this is a guy who was on the bubble in camp because
right.
he was hurt.
Yeah.
So good decision by them to keep him. And so you if you look at a category of surprise players, I think JT be on that one.
He has got a future here, clearly. Do you think it's more likely when, let's say everyone's healthy, it's the offseason, Posluszny in the middle, now it looks like Telvin is starting to slide into that weak side role. Do you see JT as your Otto, or do you see him as preferably your primary backup across multiple positions?
I think you see him as your swing guy special team stud because he played. They had to take him off those when he started, and the special team suffered. So I think they want his leadership on that unit, but also in a five-second span, go and play Otto. Okay, go and play Mike. He can handle both those things. So he's one of those guys that you need on a team, but not playing 1,000 snaps on defense.
641-1010, the number. Let's go back to the phones. Jim, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. How you doing?
Hey, guys. I would have to agree with the previous caller, though, a little bit, because for a while there, I thought the defense was going to, between you know JT and everything, I think the defense was going to score more than the offense there for a while. But, I think Cindric Marks is an easy choice, but I still think Chris Clemens has helped because, I mean, Cindric was here last year. And until we added, you know, Chris Clemens, some other guys, you know, it didn't really show up. But offense, good grief, that's a tough one. But I have to agree with Ryan on Eugene Robinson. My question to you is, and I think this is kind of one of those things, everybody's been complaining about Luke Jokel and everything else. What I find humorous is that if everybody thinks back to the 2013 draft, after watching Kansas City the other night just get, you know, pummeled, or watch Alex Smith getting pummeled, everybody said, well, Dave Caldwell's first draft, the safest pick in the draft was either Eric Fisher or Luke Jokel, and both of them have been what I would call disappointments. And my question to you is does that disprove the fact that the comments that everybody makes is that there's always a, quote, safe pick in the draft? Because if you'll remember, we were all talking about, oh, the Jags sure. ought to take Geno Smith. There's no such thing as a safe pick.
No, I got you. All right, a couple of points. One, obviously you met Allen Robinson, said Eugene. I know you didn't say Eugene Robinson was the MVP of the Jags offense. But anyway, moving beyond that, look, Tony, Aaron Curry, safest pick in the draft, right? What year was that? How quick was he out of the league?
That was, remember, what, 4 or 5 years
he
ago?
He went fourth overall.
Yeah.
Didn't he to Seattle? Did he go Seattle or Oakland?
He went to Oakland.
Oakland and got traded to Seattle.
Drafted by Seattle.
Yeah. Drafted by Seattle, went, then got traded to Oakland. It's one way or the other.
And he was in New York for a cup of coffee, too.
It doesn't mean that some years people are right. Some years you look at a guy and you say, okay, you know what? Jake Long is a safe pick. Maybe he's the safest pick, and that's what Miami thought. That's why they went with him over
Matt Luck
Ryan.
Andrew Luck is a safe pick.
Andrew Luck was a safe pick. That turned out to be correct. It doesn't guarantee – anytime you use that phrase, it doesn't mean you're right.
Right.
You know, I mean, sometimes you have to wait and see how it plays out. Sometimes those guys do turn out to be safe picks. The one thing I will say is, no matter if we all say it, Ryan, it's a GM's job to make the right decision. No matter if everyone's in agreement that player X is the guy and he picks X and he's no good, it's still on the GM, right? It doesn't matter what anybody else's opinion of it is. I'm not pointing at Dave Caldwell. Luke Jokel's story is yet to be completely written here in Jacksonville. I'm just saying as a general rule of thumb.
Because that's the way, especially with this team, that's the way they want to build this team and find standout players is through the draft. You know, they make the, it sounds like an excuse. Well, Luke Jokel's only played 16 games. And we really hadn't talked about him the last month and a half or so because he had been better. But that's the position where you do struggle. Quarterback ends up on their keister.
Right. And you're gonna notice it right away. There's nowhere to really hide in that regard. Let's see if we can get Greg in before we break here on 1010XL, 641-1010, the number. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hey, guys. Hope I don't drop this call before I get my picks in here. I would say March is obvious, but on the offensive side, I know it's special. Yeah, I would like to put Anger in there. I think he's been on point this year.
Okay, more of a special teams kind of MVP.
I would go with Denard Robinson because I think they're getting more than what they bargained for him this year versus what they got last year.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with that. Who had him doing any kind of significant role this year? as far as anger goes, I think he's been up now, but we almost put him on the defensive side if you had to pick a side because he creates that field position for them to.
True.
But, you know, but I mean, Denard deserves a vote.
Oh, absolutely. He's got a few. I mean, Denard deserves consideration. There's no one clear-cut guy. That's why I think it's interesting to see.
Who 32-way point tie to. For first.
Well, probably more like a 6-way tie for first, unfortunately, and then it's a 26-way tie for last, I think.
I'm waiting for somebody to vote Cam Bradfield.
No.
Well, no, that's not going to happen. And by the way, going to a previous call just a moment ago, talking about Clemens and Marks on that defensive line,
yeah.
We talked about this a lot. In the offseason when they made the moves to go get Clemens and Bryant and how well Derek Marks had played last season in his first year in Jacksonville with nothing else on that defensive line, essentially, with a bunch of guys trying to figure it out. Babin wasn't really any good for this team last year. And we talked about when we were in the offseason saying, okay, who's going to be the defensive MVP of this team? And Marks' name got brought up a lot, and it's because they were bringing in guys like Clemens that may be able to get after the passer on the outside. Having somebody else on that line where you can't just double-team some Derek constantly, give him some single matchups and watch him dominate, and that's exactly what he's done to this point this season. He has taken full advantage of the moves that this team has made.
Absolutely. He's having a better year after signing the long-term deal, as we talked about a little
Didn't get fat and happy
yesterday.
It's good to see.
He's a big boy, but he's a happy guy. But I understand your meaning as well. We'll hear from Blake Bortles. We'll hear from Jed Fish. Coming up, take more of your calls as well if you'd like to weigh in on three-quarter poll. Jags offensive and defensive MVPs, who would get your votes? Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today. On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
There's good things and bad things. You know, it's kind of the story of every week. There's, you know, good things to keep building on. There's bad things to improve on. It was a really good team win from all three phases, and, you know, it was something that we definitely took it and learned from.
There's your quarterback, Blake Bortles, talking about what they can do, the Jags, to build off of that comeback drive. Do you think momentum is a real thing? I mean, we talk about it all the time. This team has momentum. That team has momentum. Does it carry over week to week? Is there in-game? I think in-game momentum is a real thing, right? When you get that feeling going that you can't be beat.
I think there is for a younger team like this one. But for the young team, it can also disappear in 2 seconds. So if they don't get off to a great start on Sunday against Houston, nobody will be thinking about, hey, they rallied against the Giants. Now it's, okay, why are they behind again? So I think if they get off to a solid start on offense, maybe they can carry that over.
I got the theme, by the way. I got it. This is Sunday's Here's Where the Story Ends. I don't know if you remember the previous song.
Just remember it was Green Day.
Yeah, it was Green Day. Nice Guys Finish Last. What do you got?
Tom Coughlin, out.
Tom Coughlin has done nothing for the Giants. Ding, 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 ding. It's the last Sunday game at home this year.
Good job. Isn't that so sad?
No.
Yes.
I mean, it's sad. I guess it's not that it's. They have another home game. The
Correct.
Thursday night game will be
Correct.
Great.
Yes, it will.
Here's the thing about a football season: it ends.
Yes, it does. And at this
Too
point,
quickly.
At this point, I understand. It's fun when you come out. I mean, this week we had people calling in said they've been season ticket holders for 20 years, and this was the most fun game that they've ever been to because of the dynamics. And you know what? Hey, to each your own, however you enjoy it. You know, you want as many as you can. Especially if you're a season ticket holder and you come every week, you only have a couple left. I get it. You know, it's a little melancholy at this time of the year, but you got a 2-10 team. You're not going anywhere. The season's going to end. What you really want is for next season to start. Enjoy the couple of games you have left. Hope you have something to springboard
sure.
you into the off season.
But it is kind of it's a weird, as much fun as the stadium experience has been this year with all the upgrades that they provided, and you've seen the polls coming out of the stadium. According to the fans leaving stadiums this year, the home experience here in Jacksonville is better than anywhere else in the league. After this Sunday, you're not doing it on a Sunday again until August.
That's true.
I mean, that's 8 months where you're not going to get the opportunity to come down and do this communal, let's get together on a Sunday afternoon and watch our team in that stadium with all the amenities that they've provided. You got 8 months where you're not going to be able to do it. And in that sense, it is a little sad.
Let's be honest. Lawrence is sad that she doesn't get to hang out with us in person that many times throughout the course of the football season.
Sure.
Those opportunities are now dwindling.
Or that means for her there's one less chance for her to appear on national television.
Yeah! Fist pumper.
There's that, too.
She's the fist pumper.
The tailgating, just the beautiful sunny days. I love seeing everybody.
Bottle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, why?
I'm not working.
She's not working. Her work ends at kickoff.
My work is cheering.
Colored Gatorade.
Right. Who cares? If there's something beer colored in a Gatorade bottle, I'm thinking it's not beer. All right.
And it wasn't a Gatorade bottle, just for the record.
Right. Just drink a beer. You're an adult.
Right. It's a beer with a koozie on it.
Have a good time.
I'm not hiding anything here.
It's all good. Fortunato got some screen time, too. Did you see that?
He did.
They really framed.
Where was Frank?
See, that's what I think they thought that Fortunato was on the broadcast team.
I think that's exactly what they thought.
Right. And they framed it with here's the three-man broadcast booth. They left that shot on there. I love that.
Poor Frank.
I know. It was great.
Wait, so is he sitting?
It's rookie hazing.
So does he sit on the other side of Joe?
On this instance, no. I'm thinking he probably sits on the other side of Logman. It looked like Joe was up against the wall there. I think Frank sits on the far left at home is what I'm guessing. I'm not up in the booth. I know I've been on.
No, then they all sit.
Baselli was standing.
Okay.
When they had the shot on.
I thought he was,
It might depend with the flow of the game, too. You know, some people like to stand. Ballou used to do his show standing up, you know, like a 3-hour talk show. I don't feel the need.
No.
If you want to go for it, you feel free and you can start that trend.
I can see Rick doing that. He's a,
Hyperkinetic.
Yeah, likes the emphasis and stuff.
Right, nothing wrong with that. All right, let's hear from Jed Fish speaking yesterday with the assembled media, and we've been talking about Bortles and the game-winning drive. Can they build off of that? This is Jed Fish's input as to what he took away from that.
I think it's awesome for him to build off of the way he did it, 4-for-5 passing, also using his legs, and I think gained 30 yards using his legs. So that made a big difference for us, and also overcoming a penalty. You're down in there close to field goal range, and then we run an outside zone play and get a holding and have to go back to the 45-yard line. So it was good, really good for him.
You look at Jed Fish's game plan, you said he needed to be a little more creative. You talked about a few wildcat plays in there. I think they rolled the pocket more. So he did some different things. The touchdown to Lee was one of those oddball formations.
The wildcat, you're sort of hovering around the edges of the box.
Right.
Then you go with that touchdown is on another planet.
Right. So you give him credit when he does some of those things, but if those plays don't work, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? If you don't execute those plays, if Blake misses Marquise Lee on that pass or Robinson doesn't run well out of the wildcat, then you're like, Jed Fish still can't get anything going with this offense. So it's just, everything's a little bit better. Everybody relaxes, I think, a little bit when you get a W.
Well, and on that drive, and we're about to hear Jed Fish talk about the pass to Lee and that touchdown, it was a brilliantly called drive. I mean, that for a team that had nothing going on offense in that entire game, to pull out the wildcat, it worked as well as it did, and then to pull out that kind of gadget play where it was clear the Giants were confused by what the Jags were trying to do on that, and the athleticism of Marquise Lee really showed up. He talked about that pass from Bortles to Lee for that touchdown.
Good ball, good route, one-on-one coverage, and had a chance to throw a go route and took advantage of it. He had time back there and, really just had to take his steps and throw it out there and let Marquise run under the ball. Don't feel like you have to aim it, and I think that was good.
I mean, it was funny watching Jed talk about that play because it was almost like he was saying, what the hell did you expect him to do? He's got to make that throw.
Right.
It was a perfectly thrown ball. I mean, so I thought that Blake probably deserved a little more credit for that play than he got.
Yeah,
it's a touchdown.
Hold him to a high standard, I guess.
Sure.
Whatever, he's an NFL.
But it really does. You go back and watch that play, the corner wasn't in bad position. Lee just ran by him.
Yeah.
I mean, just ran by him. That athleticism showed up, and I go back to the drive. Was it against Tennessee that they got the touchdown on the first drive of the game? And I thought, again, Jed Fish called just a wonderful drive in that case. I think there's been times this year where they execute a little bit, on the offensive side of the ball, and it makes Jed look really good. And then there's times when his quarterback's getting sacked seven times and everything is not working and it doesn't matter what he calls. Doesn't matter if the guy's running wide open downfield. His quarterback hadn't had time to get to that play.
It's funny how that works, right?
Right. And it's happened a lot to this team this year.
Well, yeah, the opening drive of Tennessee when they scored a touchdown, that's when Bortles got sort of flushed out through the 59-yarder to Harbor.
Right.
But, I mean, that's the kind of play they need. Like, they need... They've scored some opening drive touchdowns, but sort of dried up since the Dallas game the last two games. So, I mean, I think, you know, running some gadget stuff coming right out of the gate wouldn't be a bad idea Sunday.
What about J.J. Watt? We talked about him a little bit. Everybody else around the league's talking about the season that he's having. How difficult is it to prepare for the Houston defense because of his presence?
Well, he's really good. I mean, I thought he was really good last year. No, he's a great football player. Not just a good football player. He's a great football player. He's going to be a challenge to go against, and we know that. I mean, who's on the front page of, like, the front cover of Sports Illustrated and ESPN Magazine the same week, you know? I mean, the guy's a dude, and we know that.
Can you say guy's a dude?
Guy's a dude.
That guy's a dude.
He's a dude. She's a dude.
That made the end of that quote made the TU today. I mean, you can't use the word dude enough.
That guy's a dude.
That guy's a dude.
That, and you know, look, they'll throw him the ball too if they put him in there on the goal line. He's not
sure.
In there for cosmetic purposes. Who are the guys you need to be concerned with on this football team? J.J. Watt certainly tops the list, you would think. Is it DeAndre Hopkins now in the passing game more so than Andre Johnson?
I think so because, you know, Johnson has more catches, but Hopkins is their big play guy. I mean, he's got touchdowns of 76, 12, 35, 7, 58, and 34 this year. And that means they're hitting some home runs, and he's that guy that can run by people. Andre's like, you know, around 10 yards a catch. But, you know, Hopkins is their big guy. Foster is averaging over 100 yards a game. So Texans present some issues on offense.
All right, we will get back to Jed Fish talking about Luke Jokel and the offensive line.
Hey, that's the dude that's going to block J.J. Watt.
It's a dude, right? He's a dude. The other guy's a dude. We're going to throw 11 dudes out there at a time and see what happens, see if we can score more points than the other team. This state in football history. Coming up next, the Honda Drive around the NFL as well. Jaguars Today rolls on. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Hauer, and Fat Tony here with you. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you all week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. A couple of things happened on this date in football history. 1997, then rookie running back Corey Dillon of the Cincinnati Bengals set a rookie record. 246 yards on the ground in a 41-14 victory over Tennessee. More interesting to me is the guy whose birthday is today, born 1961, Frank Reich, former NFL quarterback with several teams, obviously known at one point for holding the record for the biggest comeback both in college and professional football. The college comeback has since been surpassed. When we talk about the Jags coming back from 21 down this week, the Buffalo Bills were down 35-3 in the third quarter of a wild card playoff game on January 3rd, 1993, and Reich led them all the way back to an overtime victory. I remember at the time, Ryan, the NFL is such a stickler for their intellectual property rights. The people in Buffalo, a lot of people, like 35-3, they turned the game off. They didn't watch the second half of the game, or they didn't have a VCR set or whatever, and they practically begged the NFL to replay that just in Buffalo, and they wouldn't do it. They would not replay the game. You'd think, man, now NFL Network replays those things all the time.
Right.
The next day.
Exactly. You know, so I think they've learned it's not going to – what would that take away from it? It would only build excitement for the next week.
And
never really understood that decision. It was Miami who was his victim in college. He played for Maryland. Right? You remember that one? I remember – that game, I didn't remember, you know, I wouldn't, at the time, I don't know if I would have remembered it was Frank Reich if he hadn't done what he did in the pros, but they were down 31-0 at halftime in that game and outscored Miami 42-9 in the second half, 142-40. It has since been exceeded. Michigan State had a comeback win over Northwestern in which they trailed 38-3 in the third quarter back in 2006.
Frank Reich, now the Chargers offensive coordinator.
There you go. So Frank Reich's had quite a career for himself. This is his first year in that role. He was quarterback's coach last year. He's coached all around the National Football League with the Colts, with the Arizona Cardinals as well. Played for the Bills, the Panthers, the Jets, and the Lions. So happy birthday, Frank Reich, and thanks for the comeback memories. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. If you need fencing for your home or for your place of business, you're not going to find better customization, better customer service, and a better quality product than you're going to get with the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience. Call today, 268-1638, or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Cleveland Browns waited until Wednesday, but they did finally announce that their starting quarterback on Sunday against the Colts will be Brian Hoyer. Hoyer has led the Browns to a 7-5 record this year. It's them tied for the sixth spot in the AFC with five other teams at that 7-5 record. Johnny Manziel, who played in the fourth quarter, the Browns lost to the Bills last Sunday, had this to say about the team's decision to continue playing Hoyer. Quote, Pettine's answer to Johnny starting is no. Hopefully moving forward, whatever transpires, maybe next time it will be a yes. Week 14 in the NFL gets underway tonight with Thursday Night Football on NFL Network featuring the Dallas Cowboys at the Chicago Bears. The Cowboys come into tonight's game with an 8-4 record, just one game behind the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East. They also have a 5-0 record on the road this year. The Bears sit at 5-7 in a must-win mode to keep any slim playoff hopes alive. A couple other notes. Haloti Ngata, as mentioned earlier by you, Ryan, suspended four games, the final four games of the season for Baltimore. For Adderall is what is being reported right now.
And Tony, let me interrupt you for a second. The league now, the new deal with the drug policy, they tell you what the drug is, right? Because before, everyone just claimed it was Adderall.
Well, we're getting some conflicting reports on that. Not that it isn't, but Nada
claimed it was Adderall,
and then
they'll claim that
if the league disagreed that, they would have said something, but they haven't refuted that. So
would they do that? Because in the past, I know it's been reported that you could say anything because the league was bound by confidentiality on it.
New drug policy says league can dispute a player's false claim. The league hasn't, so this is what he took.
All right, so then he took Adderall. All right.
Finally here, Fletcher head coach Josh Corey announced yesterday that he will be leaving the school to take the position of youth football coordinator with the Tennessee Titans, going from high school to the NFL, quote, I would like to thank my administration, assistant coaches, and the entire Beaches community for their unwavering support. Most of all, I'd like to thank the hundreds of student-athletes I've had the privilege and honor of coaching over the years. Again, Josh Corey leaving Fletcher to take the youth football coordinator position with the Tennessee Titans. Good luck to him.
What does that do?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's like to coordinate the events and stuff they do with like the high schools in the area and youth football initiatives, that kind of thing.
Well, if he gets to sit in on coaches' meetings, then it was the right move.
Yeah.
So, hey, good for him. Congratulations and good luck to you. I should also note that Pete Rodriguez, former special teams coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars and many other teams, passed away this weekend at the age of 75 years old from what was described as a rare complication following surgery. Don't know the details of that, but Pete was here in the mid-2000s, I want to say 2004 to 2006, I was looking up the years a little bit earlier. Yeah, 2004 to 2006, he was the special teams coordinator here and worked at Seattle, worked with the Washington Redskins, the L.A. Raiders back in the day. He worked in the USFL with the Michigan Panthers. He worked at Florida State back in the 70s, number of other colleges, the Ottawa Rough Riders in the CFL. And this guy got around and was a well-respected coach, and our condolences to his family as well as a member of the Jaguar extended family passing away this weekend at the age of 75. What about Johnny Football, that decision by Cleveland?
Stunning.
Well, clearly, I got to believe Pettine believes that Hoyer gives him the best chance to win right now in the moment, right?
And he has one more chance.
I would agree with that, too. I mean, halftime may be the time limit that if he struggles, I mean, it could come even sooner than that. But I would agree with you there. He's going to be given one more chance, go out and play well right from the start, and the leash is going to be incredibly short.
Yeah, and you know, that's the only thing is you're at 7-5. So you're still alive for the division. Can Hoyer catch one more dose of lightning in a bottle and get you to 8-5, then you can just play it week by week after that. But
I think that'll be the way it is, right? The rest of the year, he's going to be looking over his shoulder until and unless they are able to either clinch a playoff spot or they fall out of playoff contention. And either way, if they clinch a playoff spot, they're going to continue to roll with Hoyer.
Thinking off the top of my head, it's incredibly rare for a team to go to a first-round quarterback at halftime and then not start him the next week.
Right.
I mean, you look at just this year, Carr obviously started from the get-go. Blake here, Teddy in Minnesota. So it's almost like when you go to that guy, you're all in, but Cleveland obviously called an audible.
Yeah, and in the case of Manziel, I thought he played okay, this week. He had the one, was it a fumble or an interception that got, but it got overruled, right? Yeah. Would have gone for a defensive touchdown against him. I think not having watched him in a while, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's gotten stronger, but he threw one over the middle that he zinged in there with a lot of velocity. I always felt like, they say he's got a really strong arm, and he threw the deep ball pretty well, but I always felt he threw what they call that catchable ball that has that little bit of arc in all those passes, but he really whipped one in there. I don't know if he's improved his arm strength or I just didn't realize how hard he was throwing it.
I mean, I would have went with him because you're at home, you're playing the Colts, you're 7-5. I think the boost that his presence would have given the offense, which in the last couple of weeks, 10, 26, 7 points, I think would have carried you through that game. And then in that case, you could cash in on some momentum.
And you're playing a Colts team that just gave up nearly 400 yards passing to Colt McCoy. Mm-hmm. So they certainly seem ripe for the picking. I think Vontae Davis is questionable to play this week. Got to look at that as a consideration as well. But, it'll be sooner rather than later, it appears. He'll have the job, I would expect, because I don't think Hoyer's going to play well week in, week out. The last 4 weeks of the season. I think it's as soon as he has a bad half, that becomes the end of the line for Brian Hoyer. It's funny, they wanted to give him, and maybe he'll still get a contract kind of commensurate with what they offered him earlier, but they offered him a deal that most people felt was pretty decent backup money, mm-hmm. right? Early in the season, like a 3-year extension, and he wanted to gamble on himself. I don't see there being much of a market for Hoyer, although, if Matt Schaub can get picked up this past offseason, I suppose somebody's going to want a guy, if they're going the rookie quarterback route, that can come in and just hold the place for a little while. Right.
It's tough to project who's going to go quarterback route before you know who the coaches are.
Sure.
But let's say the Jets, for example, just this clean house.
Right.
And, and they don't go with Winston or Mariota. And they, say, hey, we like Sean Mannion at Oregon State in the second round. Well, then you sign Brian Hoyer to get you through the next 2 years.
Or even if you do like Winston or Mariota, you might not feel like they're going to be ready from day one.
And Hoyer's not going to break your bank.
Right. So you wouldn't think. So I just wonder for him if he made the right financial decision, but I guess time will tell on that one. You want to weigh in today on the Fan Feedback Spotlight? Is brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. We're asking you 3/4 of the way into the Jaguars season, who are the offensive and defensive MVPs? Which players would get your vote in each category? Tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. When we come back, some more from Jed Fish and a little bit from Blake Bortles as well, speaking yesterday in the Jaguar locker room as we roll on Jaguars today here on a Thursday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Last time, there you go. Very nicely done, sir. Last Sunday home game of the season coming up against the Houston Texans. We'll get back to Jed Fish and Blake Bortles here in a minute, speaking yesterday to the assembled media. Ryan, we talked about the guys who are going to replace Austin Pastor. He's got the hamstring injury where it tore off the bone, right?
I mean, they said ruptured. I was like, I've never heard that before.
Yeah. I guess that's a phrase. I mean, to me, if I were to guess what a rupture would mean, I would think it would, like, the hamstring, like, ripped apart right in the middle, mm-hmm. Just like ripped in half. But apparently, from what we were told yesterday by Dr. Lucy of JOI, that they performed surgery to reattach the tendon to the bone yesterday. And You know, it's like a six-month-ish kind of thing. You said he should be fully ready for training camp. Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on before training camp. Austin Pastor, that position, the right tackle position, he is a restricted free agent going into the offseason. How do you think the Jags will handle that position in the offseason?
Well, I think they'll tender him. I think
right. Bring him. Try to bring him back.
Bring him back. Even before that diagnosis, I thought, okay, they need to get some more veteran presence as far as even depth. So bringing a guy who, without paying him a lot of money, who's maybe started some games, say you guys are going to compete for that spot in training camp, best guy wins. But also this guy can play left tackle in a fill-in basis. So I think they need to solidify that group where there's not so much of a fall-off with injuries.
You've got relatively young guys. There's a guy like Josh Wells who'll have another year of experience. But, I mean, Wells and Young in the mix to push him or not so much?
Wells probably more than Young. I didn't have Sam making the team out of camp. He did because of the pastor injury. Then he stuck because Bradfield was so terrible. So, I think they see Wells as a developmental guy. That's why I would play him. Now see if he can play that right side. So it's but it's very tough to find a serviceable tackle in unrestricted free agency, or else a lot of teams would do it.
Oh, sure.
So, you need to sort of keep a guy. You need to have your starters. You got to develop a kid, and then maybe bring in a veteran.
Right. All right. What about the rest of the O-line? I mean, clearly the two rookies who are starting look like keepers. They're not going to move on from Joko or anything like that. But what about Beatles? Are they going to bring in somebody to push him, you think?
I wouldn't think so. I don't think he's been too overly terrible the last month and a half since he got his bearings a little bit. I mean, they've made at least a two-year commitment to him. So I think you see those four guys as definite locks to start week one next year, barring injury or forgetting how to walk and chew gum. And then so that opens up that right tackle spot.
And it certainly doesn't appear to me to be a position they're going to spend much draft capital on. You know, I mean, I'm not saying out of seven rounds of the draft, could they draft an offensive lineman at some point? Certainly. You know, if a value presents itself, yeah, or whatever. You see a guy who you know, you've got graded as a third and you can get him in the fifth or sixth round, maybe you go that route. But they have a lot of holes still to fill on this football team.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, is if they address it before round five, is because they've lost faith in somebody, or that guy, they couldn't believe that guy was still on the
right,
board.
Right. All right. 641-1010, by the way, if you'd like to get in. A couple more thoughts here from Jed Fish, your offensive coordinator of the Jags, talking about Luke Joeckel and where he stands right now.
He's gotten better each week, coming off an injury, a significant injury, one in which he had, 12 reps at left tackle all season last year. For him, this is his rookie year at left tackle. This is probably week 16, he just finished his 16th game. So he just completed a rookie year. I think we saw his improvements throughout. He's obviously going to continue to work on his strength, his punch, his athleticism. He's got great feet. So we just have to continue to work really through what a rookie would work through.
Yeah, that's a big thing, right? Just the physical aspect of it, getting bigger, getting stronger. Would Logman say he's at like 305 right now, something like that, and probably needs to be up in the 325 range. So you look at Luke Joeckel, you know, he's a big guy, he's a big human being. He's a small offensive tackle, mm-hmm, a small left tackle to me anyway. So
yeah, he's tall, and so that's going to be the concentration, like, is get his lower body to match his upper body.
Right.
And, you know, the Jaguars' perspective, they said he just needs reps there. Well, you know, I think everybody would say you want to see a little bit more out of him.
Do you agree with the contention that he's gotten better every week?
No, because then you're not watching last week.
Right.
I mean, in the Colts game during that debacle of a red zone series early in the game, I gave him a minus on all three plays. Yeah, missed the block, didn't hit the backside, missed the block on the screen. So, I mean, how he grades out with the other five guys, I don't know, but it's you shouldn't be noticing him a lot. You know, I think he was probably pretty good in October. He's got to bounce back now in December.
And I know D-Rock made a couple interesting points just from the perspective of Joeckel, where he spent the offseason not getting strong but getting rehabbed from a broken leg. And I think there is something to that for a guy who maybe isn't carrying the size he needs to play that tackle, because he can carry a little bit more weight. And he's not working with his position coach right now because he's dealing with a very serious situation for himself personally in George Yarnough. So we'll see what happens this offseason with a guy like Jokel. It's going to be – obviously, he's already in the target of a lot of fans, and I think the team is probably looking at it pretty closely too, although they're not going to talk about it the way that fans do. Going into year three, you talk about a guy that's going to have a bunch of expectations on him in 2015. Luke Jokel may have the highest expectations of anybody
or the most
offense.
Approved.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see, though. Right tackle, obviously we've been talking about that a lot today. Jed Fish was asked about it yesterday.
Right now we're going to let Sam Young and Wellesley compete for the spot. Obviously Sam did a really nice job when he was in there, and the reason why we had Wellesley up rather than Sam is just the flexibility of left and right. All three will be up for the game.
Channeling Tiger Woods right there with Wellesley.
Wellesley.
right?
Thanks, Fishy.
Everybody's something like that, which is pretty much what we've been talking about in regards to how they're going to handle that position. 641-1010. Let's get Joe up next here on Jaguars Today. Wants to talk a little tight end position. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hey, fellas. Listen, it seems to me that, you know, the best player we have on offense and maybe the best player on the team is Mercedes Lewis. How do we not throw over the middle in the seam the entire game? We got to figure out how do we get this guy the ball. He's the best player we got.
I would disagree with that he's the best player we have, but he let me ask you, Ryan, is he underutilized? Is he overvalued? You know, in other words, do we expect more than he's able to give? Is that what it is,
yeah,
you think?
I think so. Because, like, 2 years ago, it was all this talk. Well, he has to stay in all the time of pass protection. Well, if you look at the tape, it wasn't like 75%. I mean, he did what a tight end did. He ran a lot of routes. He
protected when necessary.
Yeah, you know. So that was a built-in excuse that was inaccurate. You know, one of the things I have, like, for Sunday's keys is you have to get him going a little bit. Throw him some passes in his wheelhouse. When they get into those goal-to-goal situations and they threw back shoulder Marquise Lee from the three-yard line.
Second week in a row.
Yeah, to me that is asinine.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
Because that's the one thing you know that Mercedes can do. He's 6 foot whatever, and he can go up and get the ball. So I think they have to see what he can do over these last four games, because then you're faced with a decision on him.
Is it a lack of chemistry right now, though, too? Is there any? See, to me that was a little surprising. Because they worked together in the summer, and I know they went a long stretch where Mercedes wasn't available, but he's probably been on the practice field for a good month now with him.
Yeah, I mean, the chemistry thing has always been, with a tight end, it's different than maybe a receiver because it's a longer throw. And
he's big. Throw it to the big guy.
You talk about these catch radiuses. Well, with Mercedes, it's from the hash mark to the sideline. Find somewhere in there to throw it to him. So, and I think when they threw him that one pass against Indy, tight end screen, Pastor missed the block, loss of five. I think there are better ways to get him involved down the field.
Yeah, every way to get him involved is better than that way.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, during the offseason, Chad Henne was the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
So the guy getting a lot of reps with Mercedes Lewis was Chad Henne, not necessarily Blake Bortles. So whatever he's been getting since the season started and he became the starter in week four, it's basically the starter's reps he's been getting with Mercedes, and that is basically the last month when Mercedes has been healthy enough to be back on the field. I think, and they haven't had a bunch of these situations this year, I think the numbers at 9 or 10 now on the year, goal-to-go situations, they look lost trying to figure out what to call down there in that part of the field, because they don't have, it's like they don't trust Toby to be the back in that part of the field, so you can't feel like, all right, we're just going to hand it to a guy and he's going to pound it in. I think they wanted to use Allen Robinson, but didn't have many opportunities, again, in goal-to-go situations
when he was healthy. Right.
And you definitely didn't have it when he and Mercedes were healthy together to try to figure out what's going on. But every week, when they get that one or two chances down there, it's like, what's the plan? It's really difficult to figure out exactly what they want to do in that part of the field. And it's kind of been that issue for this team all year once they get inside that opponent's 30. It's, what's the plan now? They were really effective getting there. Now what do we call when the field's getting a little bit shorter for our rookie quarterback? Make it easier on him. It's been a mess.
Jacksonville, 72.7% on goal to go, which is around middle of the pack. It just seems like it's about 7%.
It does.
Probably, you know, so.
72% on what, scoring touchdowns in goal to go situations?
Yes.
Okay. How many goal-to-go situations have they had, I think, would be the question, because I think they would rank near the bottom of the league.
I think it's around 10.
10 total goal-to-go situations.
Maybe 10, 11. Well, if it's 72%, it's not 10, but 11 maybe?
Right. It's not exactly 10, but I hear what you're saying. Well, it wouldn't be 11, because then you'd have like 77 or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Percent. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's been very few, those type of situations. Couple thoughts quickly from Blake Bortles. One, he talked about, you know, as he matures as a quarterback, learning the importance of needing to throw the ball away sometimes just to not take a sack.
It's hard to just say, okay, I'm just going to throw this ball to the ground. But, I mean, it's something that you have to be able to do as a quarterback when there's nothing there, rather than try and make a defensive end miss, you know, who's way more athletic than I am. You know, just get rid of the ball, move on, and, you know, live for another down.
Yeah, I think that's one of the tough things to learn. You come in, as a quarterback, you've had tons of success in college. I don't care what round you're taking in. Certainly if you're the number three overall pick, you think you can make plays every single time. The idea of just giving one up like that willingly, I think, is a tough transition to make.
Sure. I mean, we saw it on Sunday. He'd spin past one guy and there's two more. I mean, how many times was that the sack that he was taking? At least two or three that I can remember. He also talked about J.J. Watt playing him for the first time this week.
It's fun to watch. You know, it's fun to watch him play. He gets out there. He's relentless. He's somebody that you definitely have to pay attention to and account for. We're looking forward to the opportunity, you know, to go attack not only him, but their defense, and we want to execute and, you know, do positive things.
One guy they've been attacking with a little bit more frequently in the last couple of weeks, certainly Marquise Lee, and Blake Bortles commented on that as well.
He's extremely talented and explosive, and, you know, he's been working his tail off, and I think it's showing. It's easy to get him the ball and let him go make plays because, you know, he's an extremely explosive athlete.
All right, we've crunched numbers. And when I say we, you crunch numbers.
8 of 11 on goal to goes this year.
It is 11.
11.
It is 11. Maybe
0 of 2 in the last game, so 73% touchdown rate on goal to go.
I think I was doing the math on it had it been 9.
Yeah, and one of the second one the other day was a kneel down, so really 8 of 10.
So they've been incredibly efficient in goal-to-go situations.
The thing is, you're down there 10 times in 20
games. Well,
right.
That's the point, right, because the dead zone, Tony.
The dead zone
which is
still alive and well.
Give us the parameters of the dead zone. Where does it stretch?
The dead zone is anywhere. The red zone is not the dead zone. And goal-to-go, I didn't include it in that. The dead zone was anything between the opponent's 20 and midfield is where this team just starts losing its mind as far as what it needs to do to figure out how to gain. I mean, they, for a span of about 6 weeks there when Blake came in, it almost felt easy for them to cross midfield and get close to field goal range or be right on the edge of field goal range, and then everything would go wrong, whether it was a pick or a sack or whatever would happen. Field goals have been an adventure all year as well. So I dubbed it the dead zone, and they haven't done anything to discredit that yet to this point this year.
All right, coming up in a moment, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships. Look for the next day or so the newest Foundation Professionals of Florida photo contest. If you go to facebook.com/Jaguars today, the next prize will be a pair of tickets to the Thursday night home finale against the Tennessee Titans. Foundation Professionals of Florida, if you've got issues with your home's foundation, give them a call at 287-2690, and they'll give you the peace of mind that your home is safe and they'll work with your insurance company. Financing is available, licensed and insured. Visit foundationprosfl.com for more information. Quick programming note for you here. For you college football lovers, Friday night, coverage beginning at 8 o'clock on both 1010XL and 92.5 FM. We'll have the Pac-12 championship with Oregon and Arizona, two top seven teams going at it. 4 o'clock, Alabama-Missouri, the SEC title game. That'll follow UNF basketball on 1010XL. And then, of course, Saturday night, we've got Florida State, Georgia Tech, and the ACC championship game as well. And coverage will commence following the wrap-up of the SEC title game on both 1010XL and 92.5 FM coming up this weekend. All right, when we return, we'll take a look at your votes for the three-quarter poll MVPs on both sides of the football, offensive and defensive MVPs. You want to send in a last-minute suggestion at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Lauren as well. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. What do you think? Just had a suggestion a minute ago here, Ryan O'Halloran. Jaguars Today continues here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Lauren said we should do sideline stories for Jacksonville media. How interesting do you think that would be? Fascinating?
Not fascinating. Some of the stories I could tell.
See, it's not so much your life. I think people...
Sunday morning song?
Yes, no doubt. Sunday morning.
Very good. Good for you. Sunday morning song. He's so proud of himself. Very good. I think people want to know, it's not necessarily what you do in your life. They want to know what your personality is like behind the scenes.
Fuck off.
Do we have any stories to tell?
I'm the cheeriest guy in 10 countries.
You are not. you are absolutely not. Although I must say today, I think you got a good night's sleep and you had a hearty breakfast or something. You're a chipper fella
winners.
Today.
They're winners this week.
Maybe that's it.
Cheered up even Ryan O'Halloran.
Even Ryan O'Halloran feels better.
A 21-point comeback. It got to him. The soft spot in his heart.
Well, it was, it felt like execution the last couple weeks. What are we going to write about for the next month? Now they got a win. It gets everybody in a better mood, which means they're better to talk to. Gets everybody to the finish line. And I like Gus changing the schedule today. Instead of 3:15, he talks at 1:15, so that means you can get home, throw on the jammies, and start writing a little early.
Throw on the jammies by mid-afternoon, and you're all set.
He's in a good mood. See, the governor called delayed execution.
Get that iced latte and ready to go.
There's your Jaguar Media sideline story for the day with Ryan O'Halloran. The Tom Butch Family of Dealerships brings you the Fan Feedback Spotlight every day, and today we asked you three quarters of the way into the season who would get your vote for both offensive and defensive MVP for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony, what kind of response do we get?
Here we go from George, Denard Robinson on offense and Derek Marks on defense. You're going to hear a lot of that.
I'm waiting for the first non-Derek Marks vote.
From @IrishJaguar, defense and Derek Marks, and I don't think it's close on offense. Allen Robinson from Max, Marks, and D-Rob, not a lot to choose from. On the O from Eric, defensive MVP is Sendarek. Dude's a beast. What else can you say? Offensive MVP, I would say either A-Rob or D-Rob. From Nick, defensive, Sendarek Marks, who's playing at a Pro Bowl level. Offensive, A-Rob, hoping for a healthy next season. From Cam, Bowenko for being a sixth-round center to hold his own in the NFL. Marks for being a beast every game.
Yeah, obviously, I think Marks is your runaway winner. If you here on Facebook, Brian Saladino, defense easy slam dunk for Sendarek Marks. Offense, tough, but you got to give it to somebody. He said he went with Blake Bortles. At least he's given us some hope. I figured he'd get a few votes in that regard today. Don and Fuego went with Marks and Alan Hearns, which is interesting. He certainly made some big plays for this team, but hasn't showed up every single week. Josh Williams, Sendarek is obvious. On offense, it has to be Allen Robinson. Despite being on IR for weeks, he's still leading the Jags in every receiving stat there is by a mile. Dennis Smith, defensive MVP, Sendarek Marks. And he would say if Robinson hadn't gone on IR, he'd go with him. He'd go with the other one, Denard Robinson. George Weirich, without a doubt, on defense, Sendarek Marks. Offensive MVP, Denard Robinson. Again, Clyde Sumner. D, easy, 99 Marks. Offense, we really don't have anyone. I'm going to say Bortles because the game time he's getting will pay off in years to come. And another vote, Jamie Clark, Blake, and Sendarek. So offense chopped up between about a half dozen guys. Linder got a vote. Bowenko got mentioned. No one clear-cut guy. I think that was pretty obvious going in. Just interesting to see the rationale people gave for some of the different nominees.
Sure. I think the rookie wide receivers is interesting because whatever was expected out of those guys. But when you go back to where we were in preseason and in training camp with the center position to where it is right now, and I think that's really where you start looking at MVPs, the guys that are most valuable to this team. The center position was such a mess. Running back for the first month and a half of this season was a complete disaster. They couldn't get a first down for a game and a half with Chad Henne as the starting quarterback until Blake Bortles came into the lineup. I think you can make a case for all three of those positions, really, that they are the offensive MVPs because they couldn't get out of their own way at some of those positions until these guys stepped in and stepped up and took over in those spots. It's not good on offense, but if you're talking about who's most valuable, I think those are the three guys that it comes down to for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, you could, those are great arguments. Ultimately, if I had to vote, I would probably agree with Ryan that it's difficult to give one, on this offensive line, although you can, you know, you made a great case certainly for Bowanko. I'd probably go with Bortles, for a number of reasons. One being it's just an upgrade from what you had, even though he has struggled at times this year. He's just giving you more playmaking ability, and he has brought, a buzz to the offense. I think there's more things that they can do with him in there. His running ability has certainly helped, and let's hope that his recent trend of cutting down interceptions continues over the last month of the season, and maybe this makes it a little bit more clear cut. If he goes out and plays, he doesn't have to go out and throw for, you know, 250, 300 yards every week, but if he throws for 200 and throws an interception or a touchdown or two and limits those interceptions to, if he only throws two or three interceptions over the final four games and he's able to throw, say, five or six touchdowns, I think that's a big step in his progress.
Yeah, looking at his stats now, he has a pretty good shot at 3,000 yards, which would be, he wouldn't have.
It's not bad at all.
He needs 739, but like you said, touchdown and interception. Let's say he can finish the year with 15 touchdowns and 17 interceptions, which would mean 6 touchdowns and 2 interceptions over his last 4. If you can get in the teens on both, I think that'd be pretty good considering the hole he dug himself.
Right, exactly.
So,
you'd take 6-2 right now for the rest of the season, no question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. By the way, the Tom Bush family of dealerships brings you the fan feedback spotlight. You can head over to Tom Bush Volkswagen on Atlantic Boulevard. See for yourself the 2015 Motor Trend Car of the Year, the Volkswagen Golf. And take advantage of the sign and drive event. Zero do it signing, zero down, zero first month's payment, and zero deposit. Or take advantage of the BMW's holiday credit of up to $3,500 or drive away in a 2015 BMW X1 S Drive or 2015 BMW 3201 for only $279 a month for a 39 month lease. You can log on to TomBush.com for those and other great incentives from Mazda and Mini in the holiday season. Ryan, taking on the Texans team that obviously the Jags swept last year. It's a much more competitive team, although a lot of the team is the same. The maturity of DeAndre Hopkins from year one to year two, the level that J.J. Watt is playing at compared to last season, and the quarterback position is so much better. It's not like Ryan Fitzpatrick is great, and I'm not skewing my thinking based on a 6 TD game. That's how bad Matt Schaub was last year, though. And then Case Keenum, not much better, and T.J. Yates, the whole lot of them were nothing to write home about.
Yeah, I mean, their stars are the same, but you know, last year at this point they mailed it in. You know, the day after the second game here, they fired Kubiak. So, looking at a prediction, I'm going to pick Houston to win because they have a lot to still play for. They're still in the hunt, and they have three great players on offense and a solid offensive line, and then they have probably the best player in pro football right now on defense. You combine all those, I think it's going to be tight. I'm going to pick Houston 23-20.
23-20. I think the Jags can definitely be competitive in this football game.
I'd be disappointed if they're not.
Yeah, I would too. And I think, you know, hopefully that second half is a springboard for them and don't dig yourself a hole. Get after it offensively a little bit earlier in this contest. If the Jags are going to win, why? What do you think will be the biggest factor?
Well, I think you mentioned Fitzpatrick. You know, 6-0 last week. That's going to even out with him. That's
sure.
His career. So, if they can pressure him, force some fumbles, I think turnovers are going to be the story for this team the rest of the year for them to win.
Which is what they've been doing an exceptional job of, particularly the last couple of games with all the sacks, the 8 forced fumbles, 6 recoveries. On top of that, getting ready to wrap things up here. Stick around, XL Primetime coming up. New coach in Gainesville.
Hacker is on the McElway train.
Oh, are you kidding me? He's conducting it right now. He's gone from not sure to lukewarm to
statue,
full blown statue, and all those things. Renaming of the stadium and whatever else you need to accompany the signing of the best coach in America. Jim McElwain coming in from Colorado State. Ultimately, they settled on the buyout, got the deal done. Thanks for everybody for participating in the fan feedback spotlight today, as always, and weighing in tomorrow. Keys to Victory Friday. Fat Tony and I'll be in here. David Garrard out of town. We may have a surprise co-host with us as well, so you'll have to tune in and find out about that. Rhino, what are you writing about this weekend?
I am writing about defensive MVP for this team.
So Derek Marks.
Yeah. So that'll be how less is more, less playing time, more production for him this year, and how it's arguably one of the best bargains in the NFL right now for defensive tackle for his contract. So good guy, good player, so we'll have him in Sunday's paper.
He's an interesting and entertaining guy to hear from, and you'll love to see the fact that he signed the new deal and played even better after getting that deal done. All right, that will do it for us today. So for Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, follow him on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran, pretty simple. For Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Hope all of you can kick off work early and get the jammies on by mid-afternoon. Get rolling. That does it for us. XL Primetime coming your way. Don't forget the web.com fantasy forecast today for all you folks that made the playoffs in your fantasy leagues. Most leagues start their playoffs in week 14. We'll be here for you, Josh Carney and I, along with Fat Tony and Agent Gibbs, from 2 to 3 o'clock this afternoon right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.